It's time for Twig This Week in Google. Jeff Jarvis is here. Matthew Ingram is here. We even get a surprise appearance from Stacey Higginbotham at CES. Google Assistant everywhere on the show floor. I think this is a big sea change for Google. We'll talk about that and Google's first time at CES, and they got rained out. It's all coming up next on Twig.
Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for This Week in Google is provided by CacheFly. CacheFly.com. This is Twig. This Week in Google, episode 439, recorded Wednesday, January 10th, 2018. Stick it in your underwear. This Week in Google is brought to you by FreshBooks, the easy-to-use cloud accounting software for small business owners. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try it free for 30 days at freshbooks.com/twig. And by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully, so you can be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at rocketmortgage.com/twig. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, the show where we cover Google and Twitter and Facebook and the social world and the newspaper world and all the world of the world, and always with the great Jeff Jarvis from... how far have you gotten? BuzzMachine.com. He is the professor of journalism. I've been listening to it because...
you have? How is it?
It's audio. It's like reading the National Enquirer. It's we're talking about Fire and Fury, Michael Wolff's scathing. Well, it's interesting. I don't know how to describe it. His behind the scenes at the White House tell all.
Crash fire.
Yeah, that's probably a good way to describe it. Hey, that's Matthew Ingram. He is a journalist. You know how I know? He works at the Columbia Journalism Review, but he's also been, as you know, a gig of Home and Fortune. And it's great to have you on the show from Canada.
Yes.
You're just watching from the sidelines. So do you have Howard Stern in Canada?
We do.
Oh, you're nice.
Yeah.
They have Sirius.
Maybe you... because it's Sirius.
Yep, it's a regular... is a regular guest.
Yeah, I feel like I know Howard by proxy. So you were on Stern yesterday?
I called in because he was saying, no, Oprah, no, don't run, no, Oprah.
Well, I want to say that, too. Haven't we had enough of celebrity presence?
That's exactly what I called in. And it was interesting because he said when he ran for governor, he said he earnestly got scared that people were voting for him.
Yeah.
And he said, it's a joke.
Yeah. Well, I don't know whether it's true or not, but that's one of the best scenes in Fire and Fury is on November 7th, everybody in the Trump campaign was, you know, preparing their resumes, getting ready for a fine post-election, you know, relaxation, getting
those. No one expected to win.
No one thought they would win. And then he describes, like, Melania bursting into tears when they won.
And not tears of joy.
And Trump saying, at first, I can't believe it. And then saying, well, good, because I'm going to be the best president ever.
Yeah,
and it's just
until that point, it sounded like he was perfectly happy to lose.
He didn't want to win. It was going to make him money, and he was going to start a network because Murdoch was or Ailes, not Murdoch. Ailes was encouraging him to start his own broadcast network, and he was going to do that. And that we had heard those rumors. It reminds me of what was that Robert Redford movie where he runs for president?
Oh, The Candidate.
The Candidate, and he wins. Yeah. And the end of the last line of the movie is, "Now what do we do?"
Yeah.
And then if you think about it, governing and running are very different and skill sets and challenges.
But that's what you want, right? You want a president who never actually thought they would win. You want a president who actually
Some people did want that. I mean, that was part of our president's charm was that he wasn't from the traditional governing class, that he was somebody else, somebody different, somebody who... So you argued in favor of Oprah, I take it, Jeffrey?
No. I was praising Howard for saying no, Oprah. Okay. Enough celebrity. Plus, I was also arguing, the other reason I called in was that in my TV critic days, One forgets that Oprah Winfrey is the one who really opened the door to trashing television. In her original
Well, she created shows. Dr. Phil, right?
Yeah, and she had really worse trashy stuff than that. And she went on and on. And so it led to Ricky Lake, and it led to what's his name? Who was the worst of them? People with throat chairs and stuff.
I know his name. He was the son of a famous...
And it led
Junior,
to
Morton Downey Jr. Morton Downey Jr.
Well, that too, right? So I would argue that Oprah actually opened a door that led straight to Donald Trump.
Yeah, reality. She also pushed, Jerry Springer.
Jerry Springer.
As I recall, she helped promote the sort of anti-vax movement as well. With some pretty
been some dubious things she's had on, and actually, but then one day she saw the burning bush. You know, like. Investors in Facebook and Google who are now suddenly seeing the light, supposedly, she did too. And so, no, I'm not going to be virtuous.
I don't want Deepak Chopra as the health and housing.
Or Dr. Oz.
Dr. Oz.
Well, maybe better than the housing head we have now. So Oprah was suddenly saw the light after she'd already caused the damage, after she'd already become number one, after she'd ruined Phil's format. And they asked me to come on as a TV critic to praise Oprah. And I said,
oh, really?
No, not doing it. By the PR person, TV Guide was enraged, kind of. But
she's beloved. You're not going on Oprah? I feel like this is, and it's funny. This really is how the pendulum swings. We had kind of the ultimate policy wonk in Clinton, and then it swung the other way. And then we had the ultimate policy wonk in Obama, and then it swung the other way. And I feel like let's get another policy wonk in there.
Oprah's a lovely person. And I'm sure she has lots of fine qualities, and I'm sure she gave a great speech. But what's she going to do when she has to, you know, determine whether to launch a drone strike on somebody or when she has to negotiate peace in the Middle East?
Like that's so, Matthew, Mr. News Critic, the story here to me is the idiocy of our field. She wasn't trying for the 2020. She gave a good speech. But then everybody, like Chris Matthews last night on MSNBC, was practically voting for her. One of the networks had to take down a tweet that was saying that they were for her. Media went crazy immediately because that's the way they are.
This is kind of the risk of the liberal reaction to the Trump presidency is that that liberals may then grasp at straws.
Right.
Inappropriately. Like
especially liberal media.
Liberal media particularly, but that's...
Yeah, I mean, your 7-year-old nephew could give a half-decent speech at a birthday party, and the Democrats would be like, sign them up. They're just so desperate, I think.
But remember that Barack, a young, little-known senator from Illinois named Barack Obama, gave a speech at the Democratic Convention in 2004 and woke everybody up, and that was the beginning of his... A rapid ascendancy with very little experience to the presidency, and he turned out okay. I mean, I have some misgivings about his 8 years, but I don't know. Who knows? Who knows? It's all Obama, speculation at this point.
Yeah, the thing about Obama was that I was one of those who was not. I thought there was empty rhetoric, so I was happy. I expected little. The people who thought he was going to be the god.
We were more disappointed.
And by the way, we've just done this opening segment just because I don't know who it was in the chat, but you promised you were going to do no politics, Leo, and I wanted to ruin that.
Well, I asked about Stern, but I didn't realize what you had called into Stern about.
Yes, so but I thought I just enjoyed what I just did.
It's my fault. However, CES is going on, and the really interesting thing is the story of CES – besides today's brief blackout, and the rain that preceded it, is that Google is everywhere. Google Assistant, not only the advertising is everywhere, they wrapped the monorail, they wrapped the side of the building. You can't go anywhere.
They have special Google buckets to catch the leaks in the roof.
But, hey, Google, the monorail says. But it is also in a lot of stuff. And I think this is kind of a 1-2 punch from Google because they had announced before CES that they had a phenomenal Christmas. I think they said 6 million device activation, which puts them right up there with we don't know exactly what Amazon Echo's penetration is, but 6 million in a couple of weeks, I guess it was for 2017. Pardon me. That was for the year. That's still phenomenal. I think
I'm surprised actually.
Yeah. And that's a nine hundred percent increase during the holiday season over last year's. So
I thought Amazon had a lead. To be honest, I thought it was going to be tough. I think I said on this show, I thought it was going to be tough for Google Home to catch up.
Yeah, I don't. Well, I mean, we always knew that Amazon had a massive lead because of the number of tasks they had. They'd been in the market 3 years before Google came along, or 2 years before Google came along. But what is kind of interesting, and we'd always said, well, Google will have an advantage if what you're looking for is an assistant that is smart, right? That knows more than, you know, shopping and timers.
Right.
And
has the world's knowledge.
Yeah.
And it knows you well.
And then, yeah. And now Google at CES is showing a lot of devices, including Google Assistant with a display. This is from Lenovo.
Oh.
It's $200, competes head to head with Amazon's Echo Show, which, by the way, remember, YouTube was pulled off of on January 1st. And it is bigger than the Echo Show at roughly the same price. There's a 9-inch version and there's an 11-inch version. So this is a really, I think this is a very interesting.
It's not a stupid round screen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Google.
It feels to me like that's the future, is the sort of embedded stuff. And the things that, you know, work in the car or work in, it's not just a gizmo that sits on your desktop.
Right.
But where else that assistant shows up.
Right.
And this is not a Google product.
This is a product from Lenovo using
Google. Which is Google's strategy, right? To open up the platforms, how made Android bigger. This is going to be the same. This is like their Apple anti-Apple strategy. I also put on the rundown, there was a some kind of multi-cooker that has Google Assistant built in.
A cooker?
I don't understand what it is exactly.
Like an Instant Pot?
No. It's a, what the heck was it?
Which is Canadian, by the way.
Yes, let's not forget. Oh, yes. The Gourmia multi-cooker with Google Assistant.
And what the heck is a multi-cooker? I have no idea.
That's
whatever,
like
it is,
an Instant Pot.
Leo and Stacy are going to buy it.
No, I don't like that looks of that. Although we saw Amazon in a lot of stuff, too. Kohler announced an Amazon Echo-enabled bathroom.
The whole bathroom.
So you could say shower, turn on at 8:30 and have the water be at 98 degrees.
Wow. Like, that's so hard. It's so hard.
Well, you can't. It's not hard, but I mean.
You're so old, Jeff.
There's also a toilet that warms your feet.
The toilet
and butt
is pretty freaky.
And plays music and a bathtub and a faucet.
Alexa flush.
There is a certain irony to the fact that all of these devices stopped working when the power went out at CES yesterday.
More than a little irony.
I do think, though, voice assistants controlling your home, we've said this before, is a kind of a natural use for those.
Sure.
Yeah. Yeah. So did you see the really ridiculous Google Assistant uniforms?
All right, let me find them. What do you mean? These were for people like booth babes or what?
They're really, well, no, not babes. They were guys, which is good, but they were, here we go. Geekwire.com. Oh, look, these all white Google get-ups. So that, let me put it in there.
Was this the booth, the people at the
booth people. Put it in the chat.
The booth people
really
sounds like
ugly.
A 1970s horror movie. The booth people.
Are they booth hunks? If they're not booth babes, are they booth hunks?
I apologize.
Not in this outfit, they can't be. No.
Okay. I'll have to keep looking.
I put it in the chat. In the chat.
Oh,
the chat.
Okay. Let's see here.
I serve. I live to serve.
You live to serve. There it is. Oh, my
what
God.
The hell is
that? Isn't that hideous?
It looks like Where's Waldo, and he's wearing like a toque. That's bizarre.
What guy?
Is he a Google employee? Or, I know, that's embarrassing. I'm so glad I'm not at CES this year.
This is from Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
That's not real.
It's like Handmaid's Tale.
Yeah, it is.
Someday all men will dress like this.
I thought you were going to say they had Time's Google Assistant enabled clothing.
Well, that actually, don't they that have? Cool. They have a jacket
Yeah,
but I don't think it's this. Google says the assistant is available now in 400 100 million devices.
Jeez.
So that's because that's because 100. Yeah, it's because 389 million of them are Android devices. But still, that means they're getting data from 400 million devices.
And Amazon can't ever match that.
6 million homes were sold since October, late October. So I would say at this point, they are outselling the Echo or very close to it.
Yeah, it's impressive.
And they now have these interesting third-party form factors. Good. You know, it's the race is on. There's no question about that. And, you know, there are two horses way in the back of the field called Siri and Cortana. And I guess you'd have to include Bixby in that. So maybe three horses. Bixby's not even left the gate.
Did you see that LG demo with the smart assistant?
No.
The one that wouldn't do anything?
Let's pull it up. This sounds like more CES hilarity ensued.
It was hysterical.
Is this the robot? Or
yeah, let's watch this. Even robots have bad days. So LG had a whole kitchen, right?
I laughed out loud.
By the way, and it was, can I just say the worst name ever, LG Chloe?
Chloe, yeah. Chloe.
Oh, pardon me, but it's spelled C-L-O-I, so you'll forgive me for calling it Chloe.
So it's extra confusing. That's what they were going for, I think.
Chloe, am I ready on my washer and cycle?
Washer?
Washern.
Washer and cycle. Oh, never try this.
Even robots have bad days.
Somebody got fired at that minute. Tonight.
Crickets, I think, are added by editorial.
Yeah. Chloe's just like,
okay, Chloe is not going to talk to me. Chloe doesn't like me, evidently.
HR is going to be talking to me in about 10 minutes.
Inside the
refrigerator. He's just a paid actor.
It looks like we should use the chicken. Chloe, are you talking to me yet? What recipes could I make with chicken?
No.
Looks like he's got a Jeepo over on the left there. I guess Chloe.
We're going to find buffalo chicken pizza. Buffalo chicken pizza sounds good.
This is why you don't want Gizmodo's video.
Never do a live demo.
Yeah, and you don't really want to. Again, this underscores how if you're all your appliances are dependent on voice assist, it's a bad. When it doesn't work, it really is bad.
Open the refrigerator door, Hal.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Dave. Kidding. You're too fat. I'm not going to let you eat. Anything else to talk about with CES? Let me just quickly see, because I want to get to this AMP letter. I'm sure you have something to say about this, Jeff Jarvis.
Both an AMP announcement as well.
Yeah, AMP announcements, yeah.
I just thought it was hugely ironic, the power failure.
I know. Power out at CES and nothing works.
All these people in a darkened room, you know, trying to talk to assistants that don't exist.
You know, we are creating, I mean, this is kind of a philosophical conversation. We are creating kind of a dependent society.
That's for sure.
We have been all along, technology-dependent society, but it's getting, it feels like it's a little more fragile all the time. Chloe.
So here's my one observation about CES. Is this the biggest shrug we've ever had with CES?
No, it's almost every year it's a shrug.
Shrug.
Mobile
World took it over, I guess.
There's some stuff. There's stuff there, but the problem is it's such a big mishmash. We won't really know what was important for a while.
And remember 3D TV?
Yeah. Well, there is some TV stuff. There's 8K TVs, just like we all are demanding. No. And there is a new TV technology that Samsung's showing called Micro LED that will kind of presumably at some point replace OLED because it doesn't have some of the drawbacks OLED has. But it's direct view. It's using LEDs instead of organic cells that OLED uses.
Interesting.
There is going to be a micro LED TV shipping this year, but it's 146 inches, and if you have to ask the price, you're not Shaquille O'Neal. So it's not, but it proves the technology works, and they'll have more in the years to come. I did order something, and I don't know if this was a good idea or not, but I ordered from Anker a $50 device that puts Amazon's Echo in your car. It's called the ROAV, R-O-A-V, Viva. It plugs into a cigarette lighter and has two USB ports of its own. So it's kind of like a cigarette lighter charger, but it just happens to have a microphone, and it pairs with your Bluetooth speakers in your car, and then
With your phone?
No.
To reach.
Well, that's interesting. How does it reach?
You
must pair with your phone.
How does it reach?
You do. You plug the device to the vehicle, pair it with a smartphone. The smartphone's paired with the vehicle. The system streams audio from the Viva to the vehicle through this link, even if the smartphone is doing other things. Spotify deal is not done, so it doesn't have Spotify. But see, for me, it would be great for audiobooks because that would. I kind of live on audiobooks in the car.
Yeah, but why do you need that? I have audiobooks in my car. I do too.
On your phone.
Yeah. I have my phone.
Yeah, you're right. Well, just for the ability to command it by voice.
So yeah. What about the You Know Who app on your phone? Wouldn't that do the same thing?
Well, that's interesting.
Except I guess it wouldn't be listening all the time. Yeah.
It's $50. I ordered it, pre-ordered it. We'll see.
Did you? You said last week, Leo, you were going to put Fuchsia on your Pixel Book. Did you?
Oh no, I didn't. I'll do it. I forgot. I just forgot.
Wait. You're gonna get it. And you're gonna say, "What do I do?"
Yeah. Now what?
Now
I got to remind myself. Put Fuchsia on my Pixel Book.
What's Fuchsia?
It's a Google operating system that has no apparent purpose. But. You could put it on your Pixel Book now.
Just what you need.
Just what I've always wanted. All right. Enough. But you saw, by the way, that was a good example of a voice assistant being very useful. Mm-hmm. I use a little app, but this is an iOS thing, but I use a little app on iOS that has a watch interface and does dictation. So I tap a button on the face of my watch. It's immediately listening. I just talk and then it's done. And it saves it. Then I can, on my iOS device later in the day, process it all because it has a very nice bunch of features for putting it in a calendar, putting it in reminders, putting it in anywhere you
want.
It's
just another thing I won't do.
Oh, but for me, I do it because I can. This is my personal issue, but I always agree to do stuff like put Fuchsia on my Pixel Book and then forget it. Right. Or you say a great show I should be watching. And I go, oh, yeah, I got to remember that. And then I don't.
Nicole Wallace.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Good, 1 p.m. your time.
Watch Nicole Wallace. Yeah, simple. And I actually.
How else can we fill up Leo's day off?
This happens all the time, though. People recommend a book or a movie or whatever. And I put it in here and then I have it set up. That when I go process, this is an app on iOS called Drafts. When I go process it, one of the actions is to put this in a to read or watch list. So it means I very quickly process these. I don't know. I find this a really good workflow for me because I'm always forgetting stuff.
You use
so
Google.
I'm about to finish a book.
Yeah.
Do you use Keep?
Go ahead. First, go ahead. First Matthew and then Jeff.
Do you use Google Keep?
I used to. Can you do the same kind of thing with Google Keep?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
If you're all in on iOS, the iOS Reminders app is the best one to use because it does much of the same stuff Keep does. And then I use other more powerful note-taking programs than Keep. The problem I don't have with Keep is everything's just kind of there on the page.
Yeah.
Like dumped on the page. And I don't know. I'm more, not in my real life, but in my digital life, I'm more.
Add a note to Google Keep.
It's good for notes, though.
Yeah.
No, can't take Short notes thing. Yet.
Can't take notes yet. Okay. See, I think voice, the idea, this is an example of why voice is powerful. There are times when you just, I want to just say, I tap my watch and say, do-do-do-do, and then it will be preserved in a reliable way for me when I have some time at the end of the day to go through it all and add it to my to-do list or my calendar or whatever it needs. I mean, you could dictate, I can dictate an email this way and then send it out and stuff like that. I don't know. It's just, it feels like
an easier
way. I have
a new book to recommend to you.
Yes. Let me add it to my, go ahead.
Revolution Song by Russell Shorto.
Russell Shorto's revolution song.
Russell Shorto.
So the only problem with this is dictation is imperfect. So I have Rush of Short, I Was Revolution Song. But that'll trigger. Oh, yeah, that was that thing Jeff said. What's it about?
It's about the American Revolution. Shorto wrote a magnificent book about the Dutch history of New York City. Really, really
good. I read that book and I loved it.
And then he wrote another one about Amsterdam, the world's most liberal city.
Yeah, the island at the center of the world was New York City history book. Wonderful.
Great book. I want to put up a statue to Adrian van der Donk.
Yeah, what's neat is that the Dutch are particularly anal retentive and took notes on everything.
Yes.
And they eventually found these, and he went through them, and he was able to create a very good... Oh, I want to read this, Revolution Song. That sounds great.
So he has like six intermingled stories. He has George Washington, a freed African-American slave, a woman who went back and forth, a guy who was anti-federalist, the head of the British effort to defeat us. And they all intermingle, and he's just really good. He's great.
I happen to have an Audible credit right here.
And don't forget, I had recommended Boo Srinivasan.
I own that now.
You do own that
Americana,
now.
Right?
I think you'll like that. I think you'll like that a lot. Yeah.
Yeah. Americana. Yeah, actually.
So how is the audio version in terms of performance of Fire and Fury?
Terrible, but doesn't matter.
Oh, no.
You know why? You could tell they rush. It's not terrible. No, I apologize. It's fine. But you could tell they rushed it out because there are a lot of audio typos, you know. The guy pronounces indefatigable for some reason as indefatigable. And every time he says it's like, and there's a few words like that where you can tell. And I think this probably happens always when they do audiobooks. But they just didn't have time because they hastened.
They're becoming so much better produced. Did we talk about this? The latest John Le Carré.
Yes, and that's also I have that on my.
It's
Audible.
Really well produced, and so it's more
that.
Of a performance.
I love that.
Compare that now to schmoes like me reading an audiobook. The worst part with an audiobook is that also where I had to do the inserts, and you can tell it's the next day, and the voice is different, and the room is different.
That's terrible. That's bad production.
And then General Washington went to battle.
I hear that. I have to say, I do. I know. Oh, that was next time. That was later that day.
Yeah.
Okay, good. I just got the Shorto book because I do love
filled up. We have filled up Leo's weekend.
Well, the problem is you should see my Audible list. There's 100 books I haven't read yet.
I read Christopher Walken.
Christopher Walken has a book?
No, I always want him to narrate
He'd be a great. Does he ever do audiobooks? Because that would. Then I went to. That would be funny. I wonder. Let's see if Christopher Walken has. No, he's never narrated an audio. He's too big time.
It'd be great.
Time. Oh, I'm looking for that.
Okay, hold on. Search Christopher Walken. So, wait.
We're thinking. Just you want to hear him reading The Raven?
Yeah. Raven, that's what I was thinking. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what I was waiting for.
All for Raven evermore. I like the thunder. It's a lot of
Once, upon a midnight dreary, while I pondered weak and weary over many a quaint and curious volume of forgotten lore, while I nodded, nearly napping, suddenly there came a tapping.
There's an awful lot of sound effects. Rapping. I just want to hear
I've got a better one. Where the Wild Things Are, read by him. The next one down on the Google search.
Oh,
that would be amazing.
That's more him. Scaring little children.
You know, I read an interview with Maurice Sendak. He was originally Where the Wild Ponies Are.
Really?
But he couldn't draw ponies. So he ended up making it something he could draw.
Goblin Audio presents.
Oh, I'll skip ahead.
Mad. That very night, in Max's room, a forest grew.
A forest grew.
And then
grew.
In the picture, you can see that the posts of his bed have turned into some kind of birch trees.
Turned into.
I assume, because they're thin.
The thin.
Like a birch wood.
But you know what? I am going to memorize this. This is how you learn how to do a Christopher Walken impression.
Some birch trees.
Birch trees. They're thin.
They're thin.
The reason that he does, there's just a little text and a lot of pictures. So the poor guy is stuck kind of.
He's in a boat. He looks pleased with himself. He looks very happy to be there. There's another tree out in the middle of the water. I don't know why.
I don't know why. That's brilliant.
I can't wait. Where the wild things are.
I don't know why.
I don't know why.
Boy, this is the wackiest tangent we've ever done.
I was going to do an ad. And now I will.
And then
we'll talk about why the bicycles keep disappearing from the Google campus. But first, a word from Matthew Ingram's favorite folks up there in Toronto, and mine too, FreshBooks. It was in Toronto I discovered them. I was going to Rogers 1 week a month, doing a call for help up there, and it was always a pain at the end of the month to send out the invoice because I had to do it in Canadian dollars, and I had to also add all the expenses. And it was just, I would put it off, and sometimes I wouldn't bill them for months at a time. And it was Amber MacArthur, who said, there's this new startup. This was 2004. There's this new startup in Toronto, FreshBooks. You gotta try this because they make it easy to do all your invoices. It's really, and it was. It saved my life. See, because it turns out if you don't do the invoice, you don't get paid. Now FreshBooks has really expanded. They have 10 million customers, and it really is as much, if you look at the dashboard, accounting, I almost hate saying that because you don't want to do accounting. Nobody does, but FreshBooks does it for you because it turns out in the process of getting your invoices together and your expenses, you've got really all the profit and loss stuff you need to know. For instance, are you making a profit this week? A lot of small business people don't know that till the end of the year, till tax time. With FreshBooks, you can send professional looking invoices in seconds. You get paid faster because you can accept credit cards. Those invoices have a pay me button. As a result, you get paid an average of twice as fast. You don't have to chase clients for payments or wait in line at the bank. You can accept credit card payments right from the invoice. And actually, clients love this too because paying bills is no more fun than making bills. Truth is, you'll always know which invoices have been sent, which have been paid, even which have been viewed. So there's no more saying, I didn't get your invoice, which are overdue. They will have automatic ticklers that go out to your client that say, hey, you're overdue. And they can get increasingly angry if you wish. You can create proposals now in FreshBooks. This is because it's an online system, they add new features almost every day. This new proposals features is awesome. Rich text content, images, customizable sections. You make a proposal to a client and it automatically feeds right in. When they say yes, it feeds right into your invoicing. And it showcases for your prospective clients how good you look, and you win more jobs. Know what you did. Know when you did it. Never leave money on the table again. FreshBooks does the hard work for you. All you got to do is make those invoices. You can track expenses with the FreshBooks app. Take a picture of the receipt. Goes right into the invoice. Assign services to projects, even different rates for every service. Basically, it's putting your business on autopilot. You do the stuff you love that you got into business for. Let FreshBooks do payment reminders, late fees, automate it all so you can get back to doing what you want to do. And of course, with the FreshBooks app, you stay connected to your clients and keep tabs on your business on the road, no matter where you are, with the FreshBooks app. Make 2018 your most productive year yet. Try FreshBooks free 30 days. FreshBooks.com/twig. And if you would do us a favor and put This Week in Google in the form when they say, how did you hear about us? That would help.
Yes, please, please,
please, please, please, please. FreshBooks.com/twig. And we thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google. People won't stop stealing bikes. I don't know why you would want to. Well, they're kind of cool.
Oh, looking. I get it. Oh, they're the coolest bikes. I mean, the larcenous thought has passed my mind, but obviously someone would know where you got it.
Well, that's the thing. It's got blue tires, green fender, yellow frame, pink seat.
Oh, it's going to be so cool. They should sell them.
The solution. This is according to the Wall Street Journal. Google is constantly hunting for missing bikes. At any time, There are around 1,100 of them on the campus. That's so employees, because it's a big campus, can go from place to place. But each week, about 10% to 20% disappear. Many have been found on local lawns, roofs of local hotspots. Somebody spotted one in a TV commercial. One resident who happens to work at Oracle described the bikes as a friendly gesture to the community. Even Mountain View's mayor, that's the city that Google's in, has admitted to taking one of the movies off campus. Local police didn't want to help, so GPS's trackers have been put on the bike. I hope they're trackers.
Provide free bikes. They should just provide free bikes for the whole community.
How much can it cost for this bike?
They can afford it.
$100 Yeah.
So, well, the other thing is they have a whole staff that does nothing but rebalance the bike distribution every night.
Wow.
Nice.
They're testing a system that's kind of like the city bike system. You unlock it with your smartphone. The real problem
is... That feels so depressing.
What's cool, you go to Google and they're just there, like in front, like somebody just rode up and you just hop on it and ride. I always wondered, though, is it okay to just hop on it and ride off, or is the expectation... the employee who wrote it there will be able to write it back.
No, you can. No, I've been told that you just pick one and hop on and go, because you can't tell them apart. They're all the same.
It was a little problem earlier, and this may be why Google wants to lock it down, with bikes being dumped into the local creek.
That looks bad.
That's not good.
That's mean.
It's just bad. You know what?
You know, in Amsterdam, they dredge the canals periodically and take out thousands and thousands of bikes.
And other things.
Yeah, and other things.
Bikes are all over Amsterdam. That's one of the things I love about Holland. Denmark's the same way. Finland's the same way. There are bikes everywhere. More people own
it's
bikes.
It's amazing how cultural. So when I was in Estonia, it's also flat, right on the water. No bikes. Didn't see a single bike.
Really? Huh.
How one culture goes crazy with them and the one not far away doesn't.
One other CES story I didn't mention, Huawei, which is the big Chinese, it's the number three smartphone manufacturer in the world, not in the U.S. They had made a deal for the Mate 10, their brand new high-end phone, to sell it through AT&T and Verizon.
So what happened?
Congress.
Yeah, do we know why?
Congress. AT&T pulled out of the deal, we think, because right before CES, by the way, we think.
Pressure.
Yeah. Because remember, Congress had written a letter like 2 years ago saying, be careful of the Chinese-owned companies like Xiaomi, Huawei, and partly because Chinese military owns part of them. And apparently, the CEO of Huawei, who was speaking at CES, doing the demo of the Mate 10, at the end, he like goes off script and gets furious. He says, hey, we worked really hard, you know, to get this phone successful around the world. And now here we are. And everybody knows you without carrier deals, you can't sell a phone in the United States successfully. And Verizon is apparently considering, here's a little bit of his... I'm sorry, this sound is too echoey. I won't play it. This is from The Verge. But Richard Yu, who's the CEO of the Consumer Products Division, spent, according to the Verge, Vlad Zvov writing at The Verge, an hour mumbling his way through an awkwardly scripted presentation of the Mate 10 Pro. He stammered, he hesitated, he was obviously uncomfortable on stage. But then at the end, he said, well, there's one thing I want to share with you. The teleprompter stopped showing any text, and he talked about the failure of the carrier deal. Shedding the earlier hesitation of his speech, Savov writes, he made the point that American phone buyers can't have the best and widest choice of devices if Huawei products, those of the world's third biggest phone vendor, weren't on offer. Everybody knows in the United States market that over 90% of smartphones are sold by carrier channels. It's a big loss for us and also for carriers, but the more big loss is for consumers because consumers don't have the best choice.
Is it supposedly a security concern or is it a trade thing?
Well,
probably a bit of both.
Yeah. I mean, first of all, if you're asking Congress to tell you what the security issues are in a phone, you're asking the wrong person. But I mean, the point's taken. We talked about don't buy Kaspersky antivirus because of their But the phone's a little different because, first of all, every phone you use is, it's an iPhone. It's made in China.
Made in China.
Now, somebody, I tweeted that and somebody said, well, yeah, but there's a difference between having it assembled in China and control, having the Chinese control of firmware. Well, yeah, maybe. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're assembling it at Foxconn, maybe. There's nothing to stop Foxconn from. I think if there were something going on in the Huawei phone, I'm sure many a security pro has taken it apart and knocked on it and tried to figure it out. I'm sure it's safe, but
I'm not sure I would use a Chinese made router.
Yes, I
would probably use a Chinese made phone.
I agree.
Well, where are the routers? I don't know. Where's this?
You can get, well, I used TP-Link routers, but I think that's Taiwan, not China. So, I mean, look, it's at some point, everything's going to be made in China. It's an interesting question. I think a lot of it is trade policy, and there is definitely a kind of a climate in Washington, an anti-Chinese climate in Washington. And, you know, we backed out of TPP, which was a trade deal with China. Not that I was crazy about TPP because of the IP restrictions. But nevertheless, I think there's a strong point to be made that free trade with countries is good for peace, if not for economies. I think it's good for both. But a country that's making a lot of money trading with you is much less likely, I think, to attack you, right?
Yeah.
It's a good theory.
Well, we lost negotiating ability because the main thing, the main diplomatic, somebody on MSNBC said this 2 days ago, the main diplomatic pressure we had on China was the economic pressure through trade.
I think it's dumb to unilaterally back out of it. You negotiate, you sit down, you negotiate. In any event, I don't know whether it's trade or security. The Mate 10 Pro is supposed to be a very nice phone. It has a F1.6 Leica made camera in it. I think they was going to sell. You can still buy it in the U.S. You just can't buy it from AT&T. And apparently, there's pressure, political pressure, on Verizon also to back out of that deal.
It's a little disturbing that the government is going around pressuring companies like AT&T to do deals with this country, but not that country. I guess that's not anything unusual, though.
Yeah, well, it's a funny kind of pressure. It's not saying don't do it. It's saying,
right.
You know, there are security concerns about these Chinese phones. They are, you know, Huawei is apparently partially owned by the Chinese military.
Yeah. And it's also, hey, that's a nice business you got there. Hate for anything to happen to it.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to be said about, China's a rogue nation in some respects. Certainly intellectual property rights are not protected in China. But again, if you walk away from the table, you can't. There's no good way to deal with that. And I don't think you can not deal with China. It's a big, big market.
But you got to do it in a savvy way.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, you could still buy the Huawei Mate 10 Pro because they're going to sell it online. But most, as you know, most consumers don't take, but people who listen to this show take the time to find out what's available. But most people just say, what do you got?
And at a Best Buy, everything is carrier tied, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. The carriers wield a huge amount of power in this country.
Getting bigger.
Yeah.
It's even worse in Canada, so.
Yeah. Lawn Dog says, that's what they taught me in high school. More trade provides economic dependency on the two countries, and this is all part of being a global economy where every country would be tied to another country. But what they didn't teach you, says Lawn Dog in our chat room, is that once you're dependent on this other country, you're sort of powerless to do anything against them also. I disagree. It's an interdependency. It's a relationship. It's a relationship.
Right.
It's like saying, never get married because then your wife is going to control you. That's not true. It's a relationship. On the other hand,
I, for one, welcome my new master. Speaking of which, the story that got me this week was the James Damore.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's talk about it. He's filing a class action lawsuit against Google saying it discriminates against white male conservatives. Damore was the guy who wrote the very controversial memo saying that we probably should think about how we hire women because women really aren't suited to technical positions. that was.
And at the time, didn't people say to you, "Well, no, Leo, did you read the whole memo? Yeah, no, he makes a few points. Yeah, all that, you know, it was straight out of this men's rights BS, and showing his true colors. Racist, misogynist. There it is. Mm-hmm. So it amazes me. And I don't think it's gotten the kind of attention that I think it should get as a follow-up to what the coverage of him was at the time.
He's joined by another former Google engineer, David Goodman, who worked on a query engine there. He left the company in 2016. And the lawsuit says it's a class action suit representing all employees of Google who have been discriminated against due to their perceived conservative political views by Google, their male gender by Google, and their Caucasian race.
Did you look at the suit at all?
No.
So one of the things he mentions is he's got emails that appear to indicate that Google had a blacklist of conservative or right-wing people who were flagged whenever their name was entered into the system and then escorted off the premises. I don't know if that's true.
Obviously. I don't believe that.
Well, we'll see. I mean, I feel like he became a poster boy, didn't he? And I'm sure I don't know if he thought this up himself or if somebody came along and said, let's foot this bill. Who knows? Peter Thiel might.
I think the latter.
Peter Thiel might have said, "Hey, I got a little extra money."
I saw somewhere that he had met with Peter Thiel. I don't know if that's true, but I did see a rumor to that effect.
Let's see, who's this? Damore's attorney is Harmeet Dhillon. He's a California representative for the Republican National Committee. He was asked who's financing the suit, and he told TechCrunch in an email, quote, "Nobody but my law firm is financing the suit at this time. We may choose to seek funding in the future, but neither Peter Thiel," I've been asked by others, "or anyone else is involved besides my clients and my firm." Well, there you go. I wonder how a court would treat this. You'd really have to demonstrate that there was a persistent pattern of this. But if you could, that wouldn't be good. But is affirmative? See, I think this is kind of the conservative point of view of affirmative action in general.
Right. Every time you hire a minority, they're going to argue that it was discrimination against a white candidate.
Right.
Doesn't it have to be certified as a class action first? Like, don't you have to get a court to agree that you have standing to launch a class action?
That's right. So this is early days yet. Let's talk about AMP.
Yeah.
This is AMP, as you know, we've talked a lot about it, including we had the head of Google's news operation, Richard Gingras, on to defend AMP. Because I was, even from day one, thought, I'm not crazy about this idea. AMP is designed to speed up mobile browsing by, and by the way, my blog has AMP because I'm on WordPress and it was just a plugin, so I checked the box. So if you load my blog on AMP, Google restricts certain image types, restricts all JavaScript except for certain stuff coming from Google's servers. They say it's open. You could run your own AMP server, but I don't know anybody who does. They also point out that AMP degrades well, so if you don't have a browser that supports AMP, you'll get still the normal page. It's not like they're cutting you off from the rest of the world. But here's a letter from,
there's lots and lots of names on it. I have not seen one yet. I don't know if you have, Matthew, that look familiar to me from our biz.
Yeah.
It's mostly developers and programmers.
Okay. On behalf of the organizations,
I thought I would see some media company people, but I don't.
Two organizations involved: Article 19 and the Fourth Estate Public Benefit Corporation. I don't again know who these people are, but it says we are deeply concerned about AMP because it keeps users within Google's domain, diverts traffic away from other websites for the benefit of Google, and at the scale of billions of users, it has the effect of further reinforcing Google's dominance of the web. We acknowledge the problem of pages being slow to load relative to alternative proprietary technologies like Facebook's Instant Articles and Apple News. Publishers have always faced long faced difficult choices and poor incentives, leading to bad decisions and compromises, ultimately to terrible user experiences. The AMP format is not in itself a problem, but there are two things they do say are a problem. One, content that opts into AMP and the associated hosting within Google's domain is, and this is a problem I brought up too, is granted preferential search promotion.
And this is where I think they're most right, yes.
Because there's a bar, right? An AMP bar at the top of the search results. And secondly, when a user navigates from Google to a piece of content Google has recommended, they are unwillingly still within Google's ecosystem. And Google's addressed that, I think, with the URL.
They did. Scheme. Yeah, it's not really I'll quibble with that one. You're not really in Google's ecosystem. You just have a Google URL. It's not a Google page in the sense that Google puts ads on it or claims credit for it or any of that. But it has been a problem. And Google did announce, maybe coincidentally with this, that they, I don't know how they're going to do it, but they had to change browsers to do this.
Yeah.
To change so the URL will stay the publisher's. I think that's always been important. They're right. And the letter is, I think, has a really good point about the promotion. And I've complained about this from the very beginning, that it should not, you should be promoted because you have a fast page, not because you have an AMP page.
So that's what Google says. When I talked to Richard about this, he specifically said the signals that Google looks at in terms of putting things at the top or in the carousel are speed. So coincidentally enough, Google AMP pages are really fast.
And how else do you get such a fast page? Right.
Right.
So they've got to have an open way to promote speed on the web, which I think is God's work, and we all agree with that. They've got to get rid of the URL, which they say they've done. So I think they're making improvements.
They're listening.
His point was, if you could speed up your pages yourself by using something similar but not AMP, they would also show up high. So it wasn't just the AMP, the fact that you were using AMP.
But is that possible, Matthew? AMP is such a...
If you just had text on your pages, if it was a static text page, it should load faster than anything.
Take out all the JavaScript.
Yeah.
Take out all the JavaScript, take out all the ads, and it'll load really fast.
Yeah. I mean...
You'll make no money, but
Right. And the other thing they don't mention in there that I have heard as a criticism is that Google, it is technically open source, but Google is effectively directing it. And they're implementing ad requirements that effectively benefit them.
Right. Which I agree with. You can read this letter at ampletter.org.
And you can also read the Google response about the URL. I just went to a CNN page, and it now is amp.cnn. Yeah. It's already implemented.
I have a similar problem with Google talking about what it's doing for the web and the things it's doing that are good. So, for example, ad blocking in Chrome. Blocking crappy ads is good. It's good for users. But presumably, no Google ads will be blocked.
Right.
And so to have those measures implemented by one of the world's largest ad companies seems a little like a conflict to me.
Yep. I argued some time ago that publishers should create an ad blocker and thus hold to standards.
Yeah.
But we don't do that.
Yeah.
And let's face it. I mean, publishers are to blame. The reason that AMP and instant articles could get so much traction is because publishers' websites are terrible.
Google, in a related story, stops serving ads from a shady rehab clinic in the UK following investigative report after announcing in September a temporary ban on those ads in the United States. So, the last line of the AMP letter really is the line that matters most to me, which is the web is not Google and should not just be Google.
Yeah.
And we're really seeing assault in many directions on a free and open internet, a free and open web. And
you know, it's not just Google.
I don't think this is that.
I don't know if it's that or not. I mean, if it has the impact of that, whether it's Google's intent. You started to say, Matthew, we see it somewhere else. Where else?
I was just saying it's not just Google. It's Facebook, too.
Yeah.
I mean,
that's Facebook instant articles. Yeah. Facebook would love you never to leave Facebook. They don't don't even ever link out. I mean, they blatantly don't link out of Facebook. Right?
Yeah. In fact, they've spent a long time hiding links, making it difficult to see the canonical link, making it hard for people to click and move off the platform. because they want to keep you within the ecosystem. Yeah.
I mean, if you blame Google for doing something a little bit like that, you got to blame Facebook for doing something a lot like that. Well, I would say both are, you know, I've been critical of both, and I do think we just need to be aware of it, because it's such a great, the open web and the open net is such a great resource. We need to defend it, and obviously we need to defend it against all attacks, whether it's from the FCC. Did Ajit Pai give his speech at CES?
No, he wouldn't go because he got death threats.
But then there was some thought he might do it via Skype.
Oh, I didn't see that.
That would be pretty funny, especially if it got slowed down.
Yeah, especially if it got slowed
down. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, he didn't go. He didn't.
He should have used the telepresence bot.
Yeah. Yeah. The little robot coming out. I'm Ajit
Pai. Like
Snowden. Yeah.
Yeah.
So he's not only did he see, so this kind of does put lie to the reason. You know, he said, well, I can't do it because it's not safe. But he didn't even make an appearance via tele.
Yep, you're right.
So what he doesn't really, what's not safe is he doesn't want to talk about it. The session was a FCC-FTC super session with FTC acting chair Maureen Olhausen and Gary Shapiro of the CTA, but nobody from the FCC there. And, of course, they talked about net neutrality. Shapiro opened the event saying, possibly no other session in CES history has gotten as much pre-show attention as this one. But he said, Ajit Pai has faced some horrible situations involving some personal threats to his life and his kids and his home. That's a shame. Please, if you want to fight for net neutrality, don't do it by attacking a person or even worse, their family. The CTA's position on net neutrality, that's tough, right? Because the Consumer Technology Association represents Verizon, among others. This is a very complex issue in terms of nuance under any scenario, says Gary Shapiro. Republicans and Democrats agree on the most fundamental basic principles of being able to get what you should get. Whatever that means.
The assignment here was write something as long as possible. No one will read it.
No sense. No matter
what. Have no idea what we have.
No matter which laws evolve over time, there's the backup of the FCC, the backup of Congress, and there's the bipartisan agreement on the basic fundamental principles, which I haven't stated, but something like being able to get what you should get is the tautological fundamental principle. And you should have what you have, and you should see what you see.
And you should say what you mean.
Oh, yeah, he left that one out. Yeah, I understand. Poor Gary. I mean, he's got to represent all the companies involved in this. Mark Zuckerberg has a personal challenge every year. What was it? One year he was going to hunt and kill
Jarvis.
All the meat that he would eat.
Yeah.
And then last year, I think it was to create a AI that would run his house.
And he learned Mandarin.
He learned Mandarin. Did that very. States. I would say, arguably, that was the most effective. This year, his challenge is fixing Facebook.
Good luck with that.
Well, I admire him for saying there's something wrong with Facebook. But what is it?
But couldn't that have been his challenge last year or the year before or the year before that?
Well,
Ari Melber on MSNBC has been, I think, in some ways too tough on Zuckerberg and Facebook, but he did a good response to that. And he said, good, Mark, good. You know, you've done this.
Yeah,
He said, every other one of your challenges has had a goal and a metric.
Ah.
We don't see that here.
Yes.
What's the goal?
Excellent.
And what's the metric for success? And I think it was a fair challenge.
How do you measure it?
Yeah.
To Mark Zuckerberg and say, okay, identify what the problem is and tell us how you're going to see when you fix it. I mean, I think that it's obviously a very amorphous challenge in terms of saying, how do I get rid of bad actors better? And how do we support better community? That's pretty amorphous. But I think Melber has a point that okay, then let's start to make it tangible the way you engineers do and judge your success, your progress.
Peter Drucker. I will invoke Peter Drucker, great management expert, who said all goals have to be smart, specific, measurable, achievable, relevant, and time-bound. We've got time-bound. We certainly have relevance.
Measurable?
Don't know about the measure. Oh, now I'm going to get a free 2018 life plan toolkit. Thank you very much. I don't know about measurable and achievable, but achievable maybe. Measurable, how? That's the question. How? Yeah.
I can't remember if it was Drucker. Someone said culture eats strategy for breakfast.
That sounds like a Drucker.
So Facebook's culture is not going to change overnight.
Very good point. Very good point. Yeah. Well, look, you know, Mark's capable of taking on big challenges. This is a big one. Yeah, I think the first thing is saying what's wrong with Facebook.
Right? Yeah, and I think it comes around to what is Facebook's public responsibility. That's what I would hold them to. They are such a major force in the world now. Then how are they being misused? How can they be better used? How can they have a positive impact? How can he mitigate the negative impact? There'll always be negative impact. You're never going to get rid of trolls. You're never going to get rid of spammers. You're never going to get rid of people who are going to exploit a system. It's not going to be perfect. But what are the goals for the company and how do you inculcate that? I think is a fair challenge.
Yeah. Well, one thing Facebook can't get rid of, it's AI concierge. Remember when they announced this? It was a big deal.
Yeah.
Remember when chatbots were the next big thing?
Yeah.
I was excited at the F8 conference where they were talking about it, and it didn't take me more than a few days to go, ew. And I wasn't alone, apparently. Chatbots have some merit if they're done right. I still use a couple of chatbots, but in general, this is not a great user interface.
The interesting thing was M was mostly human beings.
Right.
It wasn't actually AI at all. It was human beings pretending to be robots.
They wanted to make it AI.
Yeah.
But they never, that's one reason to kill it. It's probably expensive. They're going to have M suggestions, which is a feature that benefits from all of the M conversations it's had over the last couple of years.
Did you ever use M?
No. Did you?
Never.
No. Was it just iPhone?
No, I don't think so.
I think it was any Facebook Messenger, if you got approved for it. Here's the example from BuzzFeed. I don't know if this really is one. M says, how's your day going so far? And you say, not bad, kind of busy, and I'm hangry. And then M gives you a button to order food.
Okay.
I don't want to have that conversation, frankly. I just want to press the button that says order food.
Yeah. I could see chat functions. Do you think chat functions will make their way into Google Assistant and Amazon Echo?
Wow. No. I'll tell you what I really want to see. I'm going to start actively lobbying for this. Because right now we have this Tower of Babel where you have different assistants, different commands, different capabilities. What I want, and I think we were talking about this on Windows Weekly, Microsoft, given that they've lost the race, should pivot and say, but we're going to give you a meta assistant. You talk to Cortana, and it will figure out which assistant does the thing you want it to do, and it will hand it off and say, do that for Leo. Hmm. I don't want to talk to them all. I don't want to remember the syntax for all of them. Nobody does. It's too complicated. It's like speaking French, German, and English all at the same time. I want one assistant who's smart enough to figure out how to do what I want. That's kind of what M could have been. Does that make sense?
I think it's too bad that these things are creating effectively new silos.
They're silos, yeah.
The same way we had with instant messaging.
Is it surprising? I mean, that's what companies do. This is capitalism.
Sure. Yeah.
So all these companies do.
But I admit, I tried to use my Amazon Echo to play music through Google Play, and it didn't work very well. But using Amazon Music worked fine.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And, shopping, Google, I mean, given what we just talked about, how Google has just taken off, I'm wondering, maybe it would be in Google's interest to say, well, you know, because one of the things I like to do that Google doesn't do is listen to audiobooks from Audible.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it be great if Google could obviously they're not going to do a deal with Amazon because they don't like each other, But maybe this is a way to solve this problem is just ask Google Assistant, could you contact Amazon and get my book and play it for me or something? I guess.
Yeah, BetaWorks had a in New York, John Borthwick's organization had an event with voice companies, which I talked about on the show probably about 9 and 10 months ago. And that was discussed there, that you're going to have the cacophony of voices. You basically just have to ask Meta and have it go and find the right thing. And there's work on that, in essence.
Well, but that's the problem. Is that kind of the opposite of what these companies want? They want the
software, right?
They want lock-in. That's why I would. It might be best to go to a Microsoft whose Cortana voice assistant is clearly way back and say, well, here's an opportunity that you could, you know.
Yeah, I don't think Apple would do it.
No.
It's just not in Apple's DNA.
It is interesting. Amazon's Echo services are coming to PCs. HP, Asus, and Acer are all going to, and I think this is with Microsoft's cooperation, add Echo to the PCs. Hmm. And Microsoft did do some sort of relationship between Cortana and Echo. Maybe before you install an Echo, you should read this story. Amazon coughs up record amount of info to subpoena happy U.S. government. Amazon received 2,000 requests for information from governments in the first 6 months of 2017 and approved 900 in full, almost half of them. This is from their own transparency report they do twice a year. 1,936 of those requests came from the U.S. Mm-hmm. 75 from non-U.S. okay.
So wow. Apple makes a big deal of because they don't rely on advertising. No, we don't track you. We don't know anything. What does Siri know about you?
What
does Alexa know about you?
The same things. And don't you think Apple, when approached, you can't fight these. What are you going to do?
No, you can.
You can, but I mean...
But don't Amazon and Apple both say they don't store your commands?
No, Amazon absolutely stores your commands. Forever? I know Google, you can actually go to your dashboard and see them.
All of them.
Amazon, I'm pretty sure you can see some of them on the Amazon app. I'm trying to remember. I think you can listen back. And I'm sure Siri does too, because that's how they learn, right? Mm. I don't know. This is a good question. Chat room, can you work on this for us? Be my personal assistant. What does Apple say about the stored audio from a Siri command? What happens to that?
Wasn't there a legal case where they were trying to get access to recordings of conversation?
And Apple said, we don't have it? Oh, yeah. Oh, you're talking about that was Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it started with the hot tub.
What?
It all started with the hot tub.
It
was the hot tub murder. And the guy denied that he did it.
Yeah.
And so police subpoenaed Amazon in case, I don't know, the victim went, Echo, the murderer is, or something. I don't know. No, they thought there'd be stray audio, perhaps. Because, you know, sometimes your Echo gets triggered.
And they said they only keep the commands.
No, Amazon fought it. They didn't say we don't have it. They fought it.
Yeah.
Then they gave up because the police gave up. No.
I thought they said they don't keep the ambient
audio. They have
the
voices. They have the actual voices, I think, because that was the point is who was there.
I think they thought they did. I think the police thought they did.
Well,
but I thought Amazon said they don't keep the ambient audio.
Fortunately, there is a way to look back. Look at this here. Amazon.
If only there was a global network.
If only there were. Isn't this, let's just point out how miraculous this is that there's no question that can't be answered with a Google search.
Yeah.
Amazon's pushing back against Arkansas prosecutors' demand for information from a murder suspect's smart speaker, setting up another legal battle. Oh, by the way, thanks to the internet, we now have autoplay audio.
Autoplay video.
Benton County Prosecuting Attorney Nathan Smith hopes the voice-activated Echo, which answers blah, 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 will provide information about how a man came to be found dead in 31-year-old James Bates hot tub. The defense attorney says there's nothing useful in the device, applauds Amazon for protecting privacy. But I don't think Amazon, at least not in this article, said we don't have it. They just said we don't want to give it to you. That battle continued. By the way, the prosecutor also subpoenaed the water records for the house, and I think the guy got convicted because there was a big use of water, like in the middle of the night, and the presumption was he was using it to wash away the blood. Anyway, I hope I'm not misstating that. According to Amazon, Echo works by constantly listening for the wake word, then records your voice, transfers it to a processor for analysis. The recordings are streamed and stored remotely and can be reviewed or deleted over time, presumably by the user. So Amazon, I think, said that they do have those recordings.
So wait, they handed over the data?
No, they stopped the fight because the police stopped asking for it because they got the water records.
Jeez. When was that story from?
This is from December 28th, 2016.
Because this, in March 2017, TechCrunch says Amazon handed over data.
Oh.
From the Echo.
Oh.
Because the defendant agreed to allow police to review it.
Oh, that's right. That's what happened. I remember that now. Yes. Suspect okays Amazon to hand over Echo recording. That's right. They stopped because the guy said okay.
So they handed over a record, but they refused to hand over the actual audio.
So what, like a transcript?
Yeah, I guess. Interesting. Anyway.
It just shows you, though, between your water records, your Echo, there's a lot of data about what's going on.
Right, what water records? Has nothing to do with the internet at all. I'll just be clear about that.
Well, it does, because he had a smart water meter.
Oh.
Yeah.
Not internet, but the smart technology. Water meter was monitoring his usage.
So I got into a Twitter tiff this week with Tom Peters, the Peter principal.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Well, because he went on about Facebook is the worst thing on earth, and he compared it to the atom bomb.
Yes.
Come on.
Well, I think the atom bomb has killed more people than Facebook. I think.
Yeah. And then he went off about how, no, I don't fear the internet. I fear genetic manipulation. I thought, Jesus, what is he?
Well, was the Peter principle the one where people rise to their level of incompetence?
Yeah.
Yeah.
No comment.
It's kind of appropriate. Oh my God. December 2017. Arkansas judge drops murder charge in Amazon Echo case.
Oh.
I'm just reading that.
The case was dismissed. I can't stand in front of a jury and ask them to convict someone beyond a reasonable doubt, said the prosecuting attorney. He actually wasn't the judge. It was the prosecutor who filed a motion. Yeah. If I have a reasonable doubt. So Bates says I'm 100% innocent. The charges were dropped. I did nothing wrong. I'm not going to hide. So my apologies to James Bates. Innocent.
In that story, Amazon says that it listens for, so it's always listening, but it's listening for the wake word.
Right.
And only then does it record.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's there's not a general, it's not like there's a bug in your house. No.
Right.
Yeah. We've said that over and over. That's true of your phone. That's true of all of these. They would use huge amounts of bandwidth if they were constantly streaming your.
You couldn't store all that.
You couldn't do it. You wouldn't want to do
it. Yeah. With Google, you can look at exactly what it's kept on.
What it heard.
And you can change it.
Yeah. No, but that's true of all of these. And actually, I think most people who are worried about the privacy concerns are merely saying, yes, but with a FISA court order or a national security letter, the FBI could turn on the microphone in your Echo and stream everything without your knowledge. That's what people are concerned about. That Amazon could be doing it, selectively or whatever. So there you go. A tragic accident stemming from drinking. And that's that. Okay, so I apologize. Now that we've gone through all the, and that just happened a month ago.
So use an Echo, but not a hot tub.
Well, we know hot tubs are dangerous. Yep. Hot tubs are like the atomic bomb
filled with germs.
Worse.
Germs. Nuclear germs.
Germs. You know, the state of California, I don't know how it is in Canada or New Jersey for that matter, but the state of California dictates that no hot tub can be hotter than 104 degrees.
What?
Yeah. And
why?
So you don't cook yourself to death. But
have you heard about the frog?
But I happen to like 105 degrees. So when we got our hot tub installed, I asked the installer, "Can I hack this?" He said, "No, not with any ease. It's built into the PID."
What?
In the state, and I bet because it's in the state of California, it's the same everywhere. Because if you know you want to sell hot tubs to every state,
it should be your right to cook yourself at whatever temperature you desire.
I could well, and if I want my bathtub to be 120 degrees, yeah. I could do that. There's no limit on how hot my water heater can get.
That's the freedom the founding fathers fought for.
And 104 degrees is tepid. It's not.
No, it's not good enough. I've got as high as 106.
So I'm not a big fan of the nanny state. I think we should all have seat belts.
Hot tubs and spas in the U.S., helmets. Canada, and most parts of the world have been regulated
to maximize 104.
So hello, Canada.
Since when?
Strokes could be caused by water temperatures of 106 or higher.
It's my right to have a stroke if I want.
Right. If I want to have a stroke, I should be allowed.
No, I don't want. I agree. 106 is a little hot, but 104 is a little cool. I would like to see. I usually go 105, 106. I do. When I was a kid, that's how we set the hot tub. On December 31st, 1979.
Explains a lot, 79.
Yeah, the Consumer Product Safety Commission issued an advisory.
But it's not like I have friends and they put it at 106 all the time.
Yeah. Well, they must have a pre-1979 hot tub heater.
No, I don't think so.
They have a hot tub time machine.
Black market. You've got a black market.
Seriously,
man, that was a long route to that.
I seriously wanted to hack. Yeah, I know. I seriously want to hack my hot tub heater to go just a little hotter. It's just not hot enough. How many people died in hot tubs, really?
Of the heat.
From the heat. Yeah, from other causes, maybe.
Okay, Google. How many people have died from hot tubs? Didn't understand it.
Should I? It's always fun to ask Siri these things. How many hot tub deaths were there in the last 20 years? Yeah, they're really thinking.
I can search the web for answers.
Oh, shut up. That's
okay, Google. How many hot tub deaths were there in the last 20 years? Answers.
I think the 20 years might be messing up. The reason I use 20 years is because it's been 22 years that we have been using processors that could be easily hacked thanks to the Meltdown and Spectre flaw.
Right.
Intel started using speculative execution in 1995. And this is still going on, by the way, this whole issue. Yeah. I asked Paul Thurrott if this was kind of a pall on CES, because even not just PCs, I mean, most modern processors, except for the simplest stuff like an Apple Watch or a Raspberry Pi, are vulnerable, and particularly shared processors. But he said it didn't seem to be slowing down the excitement over the processor-controlled thermostat.
Did you see Scott Hanselman's discussion on how to explain it?
We talked a little bit about this yesterday on Security Now. I'd used it a couple of times. Scott is a programmer at Microsoft. Brilliant. He's smart. Explaining Meltdown to non-technical spouse. So he's talking to his, I guess, non-technical spouse. You know how we finish each other's sandwiches? No. Sentences. But you guessed sandwiches, and it was in your mind for an instant. And it was a password, and someone stole it while it was there fleeting. Oh,
brilliant.
That is bad. Brilliant, and by the way, exactly 280 characters.
And true.
Well, it's simplified, but yeah, roughly
very
true.
Simplified.
Roughly true. I don't know. I don't really know how you explain it to anybody, except that there's a problem, and this is going to be a hard problem to fix. And now Intel and Microsoft are saying processors the only processors who won't be vastly slowed down by this are the 5th, 6th, 7th, 8th generation Intel processors. Haswell and earlier, we can fix, but it will be really slow. And I mean, like, really slow. And that's bad news. Epic Games published a graph, which we showed yesterday on Security Now. Let me see if I can find it. Oh, you're fast. Look at that. That's from The Verge. So this is the what you're seeing, I'll explain it, is a, kind of the sine wave of usage. You know, it peaks at, you know, 7 p.m. People get home to play this game called Fortnite. This is their Fortnite servers. They applied the mitigation. You see that big spike?
Wow.
They applied the mitigation where that big spike is, not the first one, but the second one. And from then on, processor usage was 2.5 times higher.
Holy cow.
Didn't Google say that they on their CPUs they've done something which had minor impact?
More modern processors apparently will have less of an impact. It is important though you do this these shared servers have to do it because a rogue process could see everything going on the server, so or a lot of what's going on the server. So that's a that is bad. There is the bad thing is the vast majority of Android phones will never be fixed, even though they're vulnerable.
Right.
Vast majority. The good news is it's not the easiest hack to implement. And even if you do it, it's not one of those hacks that gives you like root access to the smartphone or a computer. It's one of those hacks that some information is leaked and it could contain, among a lot of other stuff, passwords and credit cards or some other stuff. But you don't know what you're getting. You're just getting a blob of data. Right. You have to comb through it, figure out what it is. It's not the kind of attack, I think, that lends itself to a mass infection. It's much more useful for a targeted attack. Like if you were a bad guy or the NSA and you knew that, you know, Sony Pictures Entertainment was up to no good, you would send them spear phishing attacks and you'd kind of have some idea of what you're looking for in the data that you'd get back. Anyway, it's going to be around forever. This is not going to go away. Although it'd be interesting because Paul Thurrott speculated, maybe this will be a big bump in new PC sales this year.
Mm-hmm.
Oh God. Warrantless phone laptop searches at the US border hit record levels. Did we cover this last week? Nope.
No, I don't think so.
Oh, Lord. I was thinking that it had gone down. It has not.
There was a story on the rundown last week. We didn't talk about it, I don't think. But, yeah, it's scary.
Figures released on the first Friday of the month, which was, January 5th, reveal that Customs and Border Protection officers searched 32,200 devices. Weirdly enough, the majority of them, people going out of the U.S., not into.
Weird.
Yeah.
Well, that's really weird because you don't go through a customs protection when you leave the U.S.
Yeah, I don't. Well, maybe I misunderstood. It's a 60% increase over last year, 2,500 searches a month. But remember, 400 million people cross the border. So it's a tiny fraction of total. And of the searches, the 32,000 searches, I think 4 out of 5 were U.S. citizens.
Ooh.
So we've talked a little bit about this. The ACLU says that the policy, there's a new policy, by the way, that the Border Patrol will only be able to, so they'll be able to access your phone and the contents of it, but they can't search cloud data or copy files without reasonable cause.
Interesting.
Well, that's something.
That's a new policy. However, my problem is if you lose control of your device, if they actually take your device and go in another room, you don't know what's been done to it.
Well, they did do it.
And so then that raises, it hasn't happened to me, and you travel an awful lot, Jeff, and
yeah.
I presume it hasn't happened to you.
Knock wood, no.
But then we're not brown.
Right.
But if it did, I think the prudent thing would be to throw away the phone and throw away the laptop, which I don't, maybe that's the prudent thing. It doesn't seem like
Is there anything that they could do when they do that? Is there anything they could do that would affect your cloud stuff?
Well, so I think it would be a violation of the policy, but
yeah,
they could just so it, the policy. Well, first of all, it doesn't need a warrant; it just needs probable cause,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So, well, only a court can decide then after the fact whether that was merited, right? They take it. Now, normally what they do is they attach a machine that just take all the data off of it. That apparently requires probable cause now. So I would imagine most likely they say, well, please unlock it, sir. And you say no. The ACLU says, say no. And then they'll say, well, okay, but you're going to have to stay here until you do. And then you call the number that you have in your wallet for the ACLU lawyer who comes to spring you from airport jail. That's how the ACLU says it should happen. More likely what you'll do is say, oh, look, I got to get home. Just whatever. Unlock the phone. They take it and if they take it out of your presence, they could put a Trojan horse on it that would get everything forever. Mm-hmm. That's the fear.
Well, what I'm asking is, so let's say you throw out that phone, but you remain on Google.
Oh, yes, because they could, one of the things they could have, if they got your Google password, you're screwed. You should change all your passwords while you're at it.
I mean, they could get your one password, right? They could get your password.
One password is great because one password has a travel setting, which eliminates everything from your password vault until you get home, and then you can resync it. But if they could get into your one password, that would be very bad. I don't know. So, good news, Senate Democrats have put together enough co-sponsors to force a vote, 30 votes necessary to force a vote on the net neutrality repeal. Ed Markey, Claire McCaskill.
There's a later number. It's now up to 43, I think.
Needs to be 51, I think.
They passed the number needed for
at least they have to put it on the floor. Yeah, it has to go
on
the floor.
And Collins, and this doesn't make up for her last vote, is now in.
She's a Republican, so that's...
She's a Republican, so they got a Republican.
Remember, Doug Jones replaced Luther Strange, so that's two. So maybe it's completely... I mean, this is completely the right...
But then that's just the Senate.
Right, and you get the House is impossible, so never mind. I'm sorry.
But it does... I mean, at least have the vote and protest against... Ajit Pai.
Yeah. Netflix, who was vacillating about net neutrality for a while, has said officially, we will see you in court. They tweeted, this is the new way of communicating with the world. In 2018, the internet is united in defense of net neutrality for the FCC. We will see you in court. Makes it a lot easier to report these stories when there's under 140 characters. You just read the tweet.
It took them a while, though, right?
I mean, they even said initially, "Yeah, we don't have to worry about it. We don't care about net neutrality.
We don't care.
We don't care. We don't worry about it." Google shut down its CES booth because it's not waterproof. There's apparently a lot of leakage. The rain, they got more than an inch of rain in 24 hours. That's half of the yearly rainfall.
That's it?
Yeah, I know.
An inch?
I know, an inch. Big deal. But you see all the tarps on the Google booth?
Apparently, so Google basically just didn't plan for the idea that it
not
could
Google.
Rain in Las Vegas.
No, not Google. The ceiling of the convention center.
No, I thought this was an outdoor booth.
Oh, it was. It was a two-level outdoor booth. I'm sorry.
It's
you're
an
right.
Outdoor booth.
Not meant to withstand rain.
Wow.
Oh, all those devices getting wet.
And all those guys in white suits having to mop it up.
What I didn't know is this is the first time Google's had an exhibit at CES.
Really?
Yeah.
Ooh. Wow.
This is one of the things that I remember Microsoft doing this one year. They built a house in the parking lot. It was like the Wizard of Oz. They just dropped a house in the parking lot. And it was to show off tablets. This is way back when Microsoft was... Bill Gates loved tablets in the early 2000s. This might have been Comdex. I don't even remember what show it was, but it was in the parking lot. And you go in the house, and there was a room in each house, and there was a person in the room that represented the room. Like, of course, the wife was in the kitchen. The husband was sitting in front of the TV. Junior was upstairs, and they all had a Microsoft tablet. So Google did the same thing. They took over. They built a structure in the house with, among other things, a slide, a huge video wall, and now it's wet. Oh, jeez. Here's the slide, by the way. Oh, Google. Oh, Google. Yeah, this is, but they were really, this was all about Google Assistant. They were very much, there for Google Assistant. Anything else you guys want to talk about? We can.
Let's see here. Did you do your other ad? No, you're about to do that. Okay, hold on.
Let's do my other ad. HTC shows a new pro version of its Vive, with lots more resolution, so it can make you even sicker. The first standalone Daydream headset. This is, you know, Daydream, the Google Daydream requires a smartphone, but Lenovo and Google are making one that has its own computer built in. And they have announced new VR 180 consumer cameras, 180-degree consumer cameras. I don't know if that's related. The Lenovo and Yi technology. Yi makes the cameras, I'm sure. I have a Yi action cam. I get it. VR 180 is what is the name of this. The content is VR 180. So the headset, which is made by Lenovo, is called the Mirage Solo with Daydream. It uses Google's WorldSense motion tracking technology to sense when a user is doing things like crouching, dodging, leaning. Normally, these, like the Vive and the Oculus, they have cameras, sensors, so they know when you move. It's a Snapdragon 835, 4 gigs of RAM, so it's kind of like a smartphone in there. 7 hours on a charge, according to Lenovo. I think Paul Thoreau was talking about it. I think he tried it and said he liked it. But maybe he was excited about it. So now I have a Daydream. I don't think I've ever used it. Ever. Who's that?
Oh, hello.
Who's that?
Hey.
Oh, my God. Stacey Higginbotham, as I live and breathe.
Hello, Stacey from CES, or rather from my hotel room.
Oh, thank you. I asked Carson to see if we could get you to join us. How nice to see you.
Hi, Stacey. Nice.
Hello, Stacey.
So this was an IoT CES, right?
It is. That was the big theme of the show. If I'm pushing anything, it's all IoT all the time.
Like a multi-cooker with the assistant built in?
Okay, let's not focus on the assistant. The big focus, everyone's like, oh, voices everywhere.
Yeah. But
what's really awesome about it is the fact that voices everywhere means we finally stopped talking about standards. We're never going to get there on standards, but we found a way around it.
You mean like Zigbee, Z-Wave and all that?
All of that, yes. And even things like device schemas, which super nerdy, but like saying things like, I'm a light bulb, I can do the following things. Like my hope was there would be like a universal protocol that does all that. We never got there. But now because the Amazon Echo and Google Assistant and all are trying, they're building that for us. So it's not ideal. I would rather have it be more open, but it's where we are.
Hey, cool. Did you tell us about some of the devices or things you saw that you thought were interesting?
Okay, so you guys are going to be so mad at me, but I haven't had much of a chance to walk the show floor. So I've got a couple things that...
You've been doing meetings the whole time?
I've been doing a lot of meetings. Yeah. Kevin is the guy walking the floor.
Okay.
But
okay.
I do have some cool stuff.
I would never call Kevin a floor walker, but okay.
Oh, that's what he excels at that. He walks through and he's just like talking to
he's
people.
He's a runner, floor runner.
Exactly. Well, that's true.
Yeah.
Kevin Toefel?
Matthew. Kevin Toefel.
He's my partner.
I know.
Like, it's awesome. Okay.
No, it's fun.
So the coolest thing.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm trying to decide. Okay. One for normal people. I love the fact that both Kohler and Delta are doing faucets with not just Amazon Echo enabled, but are doing it to add additional value. So you can tell your faucet, dispense a cup of water and it will do it.
Exactly a cup.
Exactly a cup. Or you can even train it like my spaghetti pot. I can train it like fill the spaghetti pot and that means fill this much water.
That's cool.
And then later on I can do it. So I love that. I also saw some cool, this is super geeky, but Bosch was showing off a MEMS projector that basically is this tiny 30 by 70 millimeter module. And what it can do is it can project a display at 480 to 720p. It can even run video. And you can actually interact with that display on any surface, including your skin. So your couch, your skin, your, kitchen table, like an Amazon Echo-like device could project an image of the people walking up to your door. Or,
So you don't need a screen. It almost could just appear.
Yes, that's exactly it.
I like that.
It's awesome.
Is that available this year, or is it a concept, or?
No, it's an actual working, it's a MEMS product. So that's a semiconductor product. So people will have to build that into their devices. So you won't see that for another, 18 months to 2 years. Who knows?
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's cool. Low power.
It's relatively low power. What's unique, the most unique thing about it is its form factor is now small enough and that it can project on any surface without messing things up.
Neat.
Oh, look, you found it. Look at you finding these things.
That's Karsten.
He's good.
He's the best.
It can do video?
It can show video. Actually, I don't think this is actually... That's the accelerometer. But that's okay. I did learn about the accelerometer. I can tell you why that's cool if you really want to know.
They use MEMS. They use MEMS for that as well.
Yeah, MEMS are... I always explain MEMS to people, like MEMS are the hidden heroes of the Internet of Things.
Yeah.
Because MEMS are these tiny things that take the analog real world signals of every day and they convert it to digital for the computers to read. So you've got the real world meets the computer in this one tiny little device.
Neat. This projector uses lasers too. Which is cool.
Lasers.
Lasers. So we were talking about this Bosch bathroom. Because they've got a toilet, they've got a shower, they've got a tub, they've mm-hmm. got a faucet. I do like the idea of it kind of, that's, you came up with it. And I mentioned, well, the idea is you tell it to, what temperature you like the shower to be and have it warmed up and ready for you and that kind of stuff. But now you know that the central hall has had a complete blackout for about an hour and a half. It's just now coming back.
Kevin told me that. I had to move.
What would happen to your fancy bathroom if you couldn't use it as a power was out?
All right, guys, here's what happens. It reverts back to state. So
okay.
I have a faucet that's a capacitive touch faucet.
Okay.
And when the power goes out, then I use the handle.
Oh, okay. You just have to live like a...
yeah, it's like a savage.
Well, we actually can't use anything. Now we can't because we have a generator, but we have well water.
Yeah.
So if we lose power, we lose that.
You lose the water too. Right. I know. Yep. Yeah, that's bad.
So it's like when an escalator breaks, it just becomes stairs.
Yeah.
Exactly.
What else? Come on. You're our eyes and ears in Vegas.
Okay.
More cool stuff.
More cool stuff. How long have you been there? When did you get there?
Monday.
Okay.
Go to our Instagram, and I'm not doing that to advertise, but I'm doing it to
what's your Instagram?
Offer, like, it's Stacy on I. It's Instagram / Stacy on IoT. Because then you'll see everything that Kevin and I have seen, basically.
You saw these little Sony smart speakers with Google Assistant. Nice.
Those are not exciting.
Not exciting. Here's the Samsung SmartThing refrigerator.
So that's a really big deal. In like Samsung, 3 years ago, Samsung was like, IoT is going to happen. It's going to be open. It's going to be awesome. And it was very kumbaya. And Kevin and I made total fun of it along with the rest of the industry. This year, they actually are making that happen. And they're doing it at a higher level. So 3 years ago, they talked all about like Tizen and stuff like that. And normal people were probably like, bleh. Yeah. Now they're basically, they've integrated all of their like 60 some odd apps into the SmartThings cloud. They built all of their backend cloud stuff is now SmartThings.
And so this is the new interface. This is the TV showing this.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool.
So your TV is going to be able to control all these crazy devices and it's going to have the same interface across all Samsung products. So it's a big freaking deal.
And it doesn't have to be just Samsung. I see we have an Arlo camera on here. We have an air purifier. Mm-hmm. lights.
They have so many devices are already integrated. Kevin, oh, there's Kevin.
Kevin, and believe it or not, this looks like a selfie, but no, he's looking in the mirror. This is a smart mirror.
Oh, nice.
See, it's got the,
temperature.
It's
got
one
of those.
The music. Yeah. So you're in the bathroom. You're looking at the mirror.
Nice.
It can be connected to a scale and a skin sensor, so you can see. That's from Haier. That's kind of cool.
Interesting.
Yeah. I'm getting a smart mirror shipped to me, I think next week. So I'll bring it on the show either next week or the week after.
I love this. I would get a smart mirror.
I wanted
mirror.
To build one.
How do you do it? Is it like something behind the mirror that shines through? I guess it is.
Oh, the screen on the mirror? Yeah. Yes. I don't.
Because I stayed in a hotel once that had a mirror, but when you turn on the TV, it shined through the mirror. So it's like one-way mirror or something.
There was a Google engineer who built one with a Raspberry Pi.
Oh, I remember that. Yeah, we talked about it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right.
Huawei. You can't use these because they're from China. Has a bunch of sensors, cameras, motion detectors. I'm just going through. TDK sensors.
There's tons of sensors. Everybody has a smart home section.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what else to say about that. Lenovo, I'm sure we'll get there eventually, but Lenovo has a very nice Google Assistant. It's the Echo Show for the Google Assistant.
We talked about that, and I'm excited. Yeah. They say it won't be out till the summer, so.
It's beautiful. It sounds good.
It's affordable. Oh, you heard it.
Yeah, it's got a 10-watt speaker in it.
Nice.
And the big one's $249, the small one's $199, I think.
That's a very competitive price. That's basically an Echo Show, which is a 7-inch screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I like
and
that.
It looks good. I think in Google, I do believe Google will probably win this race if you start thinking about what needs to happen.
They're starting to pull ahead. Here you are at the Wemo booth. And, of course, Wemo announced HomeKit compatibility across the board, which is a big deal because Apple HomeKit has been very slow off the block, but I notice a big Hey Google sign in the back there. So obviously they also work with Google.
And I'm kind of down on HomeKit. There's a lot of HomeKit compatible stuff. As usual, Apple is not here. But I just found out that earlier this summer, I'm trying to get rid of that blue line there. Earlier this summer, Lennar had partnered with Apple for HomeKit-enabled buildings, like smart new builds for homes. And they actually switched over to SmartThings now. So I was like, that's no good. So.
You saw the Jibo there. Now, I have to say, my Jibo failed. And I have a dead Jibo, which is really depressing.
Really?
But I wasn't too unhappy because I'm sure there's a way to turn this off, but I couldn't find it. The Jibo snored. I am not kidding.
That is a totally acute thing that it would do.
The first time.
It didn't sound like, it would just like make little sounds every once in a while, which was disconcerting.
That's to comfort you, Leah.
It didn't comfort me. it was creepy. So I was kind of glad when it died. I have to contact the Jibo folks, and I don't know if I want a replacement or I might want my money back on it.
How much was the Jibo?
$500. That was a special Indiegogo price. I think it's more than that now.
There are a ton of robots here.
Are there? Did you see the Curry that we was our advertiser? Are they there?
I didn't see the Curry. Okay. I want to say it was the Aurelius, maybe AEUR.
Curry was supposed to be out by now, and I'm worried that they aren't out.
It's hard to build a good robot.
It's hard.
Stacy, did you see the Chloe video? LG.
That didn't work. LG was trying to show their.
Oh, yes. Yes. Yes, I saw that. I saw that after the fact.
Couldn't get it to respond at all. So I was very interested. I don't know if you saw this. Johnson Controls has a beautiful thermostat that's a glass.
A $319 Cortana thermostat?
Yeah, GLAS. I loved it.
Yeah.
Did you see it?
I've seen it.
It's pretty. Go look for it because it's there.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
No, it is gorgeous. I'm hoping that technology comes down in price because that changed the game in the way Nest didn't quite in making a thermostat look like a luxury object.
Yes. Like, here's the Solace, my home Solace 250, Google Assistant or Echo enabled. And this controls everything.
These are everywhere.
Everything. This is a very common category.
Yeah, panels of stuff with little tiles on them that control all your devices and have a bajillion radios.
The Fibaro, I like the name, smart plug. Monitors energy.
Yeah, with the USB charger on the, I like that because I was going to have to rip out all of my outlets and put USB chargers, and now I can just plug those in.
Plug a smart plug in from Fibaro. The Blink doorbell. Battery powered front door. So it competes with our sponsor Ring. Looks similar.
It does.
Yeah.
And you know, Amazon bought Ring. Amazon bought Blink.
Oh, so this is Amazon's company now.
Now this is like. I think it was it Christmas? Like the 23rd or something is when it came.
You're right.
So,
and they don't charge a monthly fee for this storage, storage. So that's a big problem, I think, with a lot of these devices is that they all add up.
Yeah.
It's the storage fees. You get pretty soon you're spending hundreds of bucks. Here's the NetAtmos Smart Home Bot.
It's like Lighthouse. Okay. But without the video, it's talk to it like a human being, and then it does it.
Could you switch the lights on? Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I'm just going through. Oh, the Spire. I had a Spire.
I did, too. And I was kind of like, on this. But it's
supposed to make you breathe.
The new one is an activity tracker. Mm-hmm. So activity, respiration, heart rate.
Oh.
I feel like something else. And the coolest thing about this is you buy them in a pack of like 8 or 10.
Oh, this is a good idea.
Stick them in your underwear, and they're washable.
That's a good idea. Because that's the problem with all of these things. They're easy to lose. If you wash them, that breaks them. The one on the right is the original Spire. So they've replaced it basically with a...
Wait.
I think this is an additional... Because the original Spire didn't have all those features.
Right,
that,
right.
Oh, so this is,
did you say stick it in your underwear?
Yes, she did.
That is where you're supposed to stick it.
Did that excite you, Matthew?
Not exactly, no.
Wait till you take my age.
No, when you get to your age, the underwear sticks you. this is the Kevin, which is named after your co-host.
Indeed.
What does the Kevin do?
I don't know. This is a Kevin picture.
When you leave home, it automatically makes sound and illuminates randomly. Oh, it makes people think you're home.
Right.
Okay. I have an app that does that on my Wink.
Yeah. Who's home? Kevin.
Or on my Philips Hue.
Oh, yeah. We left Kevin to take care of the house. That's what they
call it. So it simulates arguments.
I told you to take out the trash.
It plays the one from last night.
As you point out, as we've talked about, Google is everywhere. Google Assistant is, what is this, a gumball machine that you say, hey, Google, to? What is this?
So this is in the Sands. It's a gumball machine. You tell it, like, hey, Google, do this, and it does it. And it's just, it's eye candy. And then over at the Las Vegas Convention Center, they have a slide in a big, not a booth, whatever those.
But they had to close it because the rain.
They had to close it.
Yes.
So
it's a water slide.
And there are the people in the Google outfits that we were mocking with the little Where's Waldo hats and the white jumpsuit.
They're everywhere. Good Lord.
Oh, it's kind of, I guess you.
That's creepy.
It's that. What would be creepy is if they had like random facts memorized. And when you said, hey, Google, tell me this.
If they're human Google assistants, that would be funny.
That would be awesome. Actually, Google totally could have done that. They could have been an assistant using their voice kit thing. And then when you talk to it.
Oh, you put it in their ear.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm thinking.
Could you actually get gumballs, though?
I don't know if you could. I did not stop to try to get a giant bowling ball size gumball.
Here's that Lenovo Google Assistant speaker we were talking about. But this is cool. This view is good because it shows you how it stands up. It's got a curved back.
And it's bamboo and it's so pretty.
That's kind of cool.
Bamboo.
You know, people hated how the Echo Show looked.
And there's a million of those. Oh, the other thing on this is it has a camera cover. I think that's really important.
Oh, yeah.
And I found it interesting coming from Google, which is not.
Yeah,
and I generally make fun of camera covers, you know, because paranoia. But in that case, I absolutely agree.
Well, you know that Echo Spot that I showed before I left, the alarm clock with the camera on it. When I got home, it was face down in the bedroom. And so I moved it out of the bedroom because it probably shouldn't have a camera in the bedroom. It's in my closet, though. There's not much to see in there. It's usually dark. Here's another Google Assistant speaker from JBL, 8-inch Linkview, nice screen, high-res audio and video, video calling as well. Does it use Duo when they do these?
It does.
Okay, so you can call any phone then. Oh, now Duo makes a little bit more sense because it's the phone. Well, who is going to use it, right? But now it makes sense because if people have a Duo speaker, they can call you on the phone.
Wasn't there a report that Facebook was going to make a video screen calling device?
Yes.
Yeah.
Here's that. This is a Delta faucet. Do you have capacitive touch on your faucet? So this is.
I do. And this one has Wi-Fi and talks to the Echo and dispenses and does all the magic stuff.
Okay. All right. I
tried to convince the guys at the booth to retrofit my faucet with the Wi-Fi module.
And finally, a very cute picture of the two of you. The TOEFL and the Higginbotham, the IoT podcast team in action.
The
Higgin-TOEFL.
Yeah.
Or the TOEFL-Botham. Higgin-TOEFL's better.
I like Higgin-TOEFL. I'll see if Kevin goes for that.
Stacey, I'm so glad you could stop by. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And now wonderful surprise.
It was a great surprise. It's so nice to see you. And thank you for taking time out. I know you're probably crazy.
Well, I'm crazy all the time. It's
crazy busy, I mean. So I'm glad. Because we missed you last week. So I'm glad to have you. You want to stick around? You don't have to. In fact, if I were you, I would leave.
He was about to
wrap it up. It was perfect timing. Okay. It was perfect timing.
Fabulous.
I missed you all the time, Stacey.
Yeah.
In fact, 5 minutes, you might have been calling into nothing. So.
No. Carson wouldn't let me do that.
Carson
knew.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I am going to run because I want to hit the show floor
good.
Before.
Thank you, Stacey.
Or something.
Have fun.
But thank you, guys. Kevin. I'll see you next
week. We miss you.
Yeah, I'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye, Stacey.
Bye, Stacey. Live from CES, Stacey Higginbotham. Stacey on IoT.com and of the IoT podcast. Our show today brought to you by Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Quicken Loans. I was reading the story of Quicken Loans the other day because I was curious. Well, is there a relationship to Intuit? And there was for 3 years, very briefly. Dan Gilbert created Quicken Loans as Rock. I think it was called Rock Mortgage. So now the name Rocket Mortgage kind of makes sense. And sold it in 99 to Quicken. But he didn't like what Quicken was doing with it or whatever. So 3 years later, he bought it back. But it kept the name Quicken Loans. But Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans now kind of makes more sense to me because it was Rock Investments or something like that. In the intervening years, they've become the number one mortgage lender in the country. Number two in pure size, $92 billion in loans last year. But number one in your hearts for 8 years running. 2010 through 2017, number one in customer satisfaction, according to J.D. Power. And that's in mortgage origination. And then from 2014 to 2017 in mortgage servicing. And, you know, they just got it again for 2017. I'm sure they'll get it in 2018 and on and on and on because they really are customer-centric. They want to create a mortgage approval process that's simple, transparent, modern. And they've done it with Rocket Mortgage. It's a client-focused technological revolution. No more going to the bank. No more going through your banker's boxes or your basement or attic to look for paperwork. You could do it all on your phone, your computer, your tablet. And you could do it like in real time because all they need is you to answer a few questions to identify yourself. And then they go out, they get, because they have trusted partners with all the financial institutions. So it makes it easy for you to share your information with them at the touch of a button. You don't have to go through those boxes and look for stuff. They get what they need. They run the numbers. And based on your income, your assets, and your credit, literally in a minute, they come back and say, these are the home loan options for which you qualify. Down payment is yours to choose. Same with the term and the rate. You pick the loan that's right for you. And bada boom, you got it. You got it. In minutes, you could do it at an open house. It's that fast. Rocket Mortgage. That's the other reason they call it Rocket. Because it's fast. And it lifts the burden of getting a home loan. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/twig. Rocket Mortgage. Those are all the college. I love that. That's Dan. Dan loves sports. You know, they got the Quicken Loans Arena in Cleveland, and he's really a big supporter of all that. Those are all the college mascots there. I love it. Rocket Mortgage. Is the U of T in there? Is that the Hook'em Horns there nodding its head? Maybe it is. RocketMortgage.com/twig. Equal housing lender, licensed in all 50 states at MLSConsumerAccess.org, number 3030. We thank Rocket Mortgage for so much for their support. Rocket Mortgage from Quicken Loans. Just remember the URL. Or you know what you could do is go there right now and get started. And when you find the house you want or you're ready to refi, by the way, they do refis, you can pull the trigger very quickly. RocketMortgage.com/twig. It's really not Google stuff, but I thought it was really kind of interesting. You read the story of Sarah Silverman's response to this.
That's the one thing I wanted to talk about. I think it's
me too, actually.
Why don't you tell the story first? And
so Silverman sent out a tweet, and a guy, you know, unknown to her, as often happens on Twitter, responded with a C word, which is nasty, one word. But her response was very interesting. She said, "I believe in you. I read your timeline, and I see what you're doing, and your rage is thinly veiled pain. But you know what? I know this feeling. P.S. My back sucks too." I'm cutting some of the bad words out. Apparently, when she read his timeline, she realized he had a bad back. P.S. My back sucks too. See what happens when you choose love. I see it in you. The troll responded, "I can't choose love. A man that resembles Kevin Spacey took that away when I was 8. I can't find peace. If I could find that guy who ripped my body, who stripped my innocence, I'd kill him. He messed me up and I'm poor, so it's hard to get help." So she had read in his profile that he was an addict. She said, "Do you use heroin? Do you want to get clean?" He said, no. "I smoke weed and I take prescription drugs." She says, "Good. Well, I want to kill him too, so I can't imagine your rage. All I know is this rage. And even if you could kill him, it's punishing you, and you don't deserve punishment. You deserve support. Go to one of these support groups. You might meet your best bros there." This is, I should say, Sarah Silverman is a very well-known comic, great, talented comic, and a very interesting response to being...
Really amazing. She ended up getting him help back.
He said, "I'll go." And she said, "Keep me posted." She then said, "Hey, San Antonio," because that's where he's from, "Are there any kick-ass back or neck care specialists willing to help my friend Jeremy? He's several slip discs, no insurance, can't work because of severe pain. Let's get him back on his feet." Lots of response. A spinal clinic in San Antonio reached out, offered help. Airosti, AIRROSTI. "And just to let you know, we've been in contact with Jeremy. We're on it," they said. This was on New Year's Eve. Just amazing.
It really shows something that you know you hope for more of. It's a moment of empathy. It's hard. You know, I mentioned this to a woman I work with, and she said, "Oh, great! So all women have to be, you know, moms to trolls." I said, "Fair point, absolutely." But as a model of how to rethink the behavior we have socially on the net, Sarah Silverman, bless you. That's a major step for civility.
Yeah, and by the way, don't expect her to do it again necessarily, or others to do it.
No,
but it's just an amazing moment. Yeah,
I wish more people on Twitter, particularly, would try and take a minute to think about the person behind the tweet. I know it's hard sometimes, but sometimes there is a human being that is, you know, that you can reach out to. Not always, obviously. But sometimes.
Yeah, really.
Thanks for including that one.
Yeah. This is kind of an amazing. And it wasn't just a drive-by either, as Bill Murphy's pointing out in Inc. It was, she took the time to find out about the guy. She got involved. She did something about it. It wasn't just like, "I feel your pain, man." You know, it's a good for everybody.
All right, from one heartwarming moment to the next.
Yeah.
You probably all saw that amazing video of the dog pulling the sled up the hill and then riding down.
Yeah.
The video was taken out and put in news stories all over. But if you go to the young woman's Instagram feed, this is the most amazing dog on earth. So Leo, you might want to show the dog video again.
Show the original dog video.
It's there. It's 50.
Yep, here it is.
Because I'm faking a number here.
the she says the dog must have gone up. No. Don't go to that one. Go to the one on the rundown.
The Today Show Daily Click. You didn't want to do that one, huh?
The hell with that. Go to the one on the rundown. Let's go to the credits, too.
Okay, it's in the rundown, but where in the rundown?
Down in my number. It's in my number.
Oh, Instagram. Should I start with the Instagram?
Start with that one.
Okay.
The people who haven't seen it.
So here's the Instagram. This is the
most amazing, wonderful dog.
The dog pulls the little sled up. It's one of those plastic sleds.
Incidentally, that dog is almost identical to the one I'm dog sitting right now.
Really?
Oh, so
looks
smart,
like a border collie, maybe, or
border collie, yeah.
Australian.
They're the smartest, or Australian Shepherd. They're the smartest dogs. Look at that. That is pretty cool. Is he smart enough to get it and go back?
Oh yeah.
Yes. Wait.
Yep.
So she says that the dog did it like 50 times that day.
That is the cutest thing I ever saw.
Isn't that great? This is the service. So a lot of people saw this video. The video is magnificent.
Yeah.
Click on her account.
My Aussie gal on Instagram.
17 years old. The relationship with this dog is incredible. And just go to some of the videos here. So there's one where the dog standing up on top of the dog with a Christmas tree. The dog is decorating the Christmas tree. Like that.
Australian shepherds or border collie, whatever it is, they're very smart. Look at that. He's throwing the
shepherd.
It's a shepherd, right? Yeah. So it's the same.
She has the dog trained to put away laundry. She dances with the dog.
Oh.
The dog's not the best. The dog is unbelievable. So when you have a bad day, a rotten day, just go to this feed.
Oh, look, she does yoga with the dog, apparently. Let's see. This is an upward dog, I think they call this. Wow.
Wait. Yeah.
Nice. Oh, no. Look at that. Wow. Oh, he's doing a handstand. That's not even... Now I want to get an Australian Shepherd or border.
And just go to the videos along this.
Can mop the floor.
Yeah. And paint too. He paints. He or she. Secret is the dog's name.
Secret adores Moppy. She was so excited she bounced into it. I think she likes it even better than vacuuming or sweeping. Well, she obviously loves her owner, my Aussie gal.
Just phenomenal. You want to have one of these dogs. Just amazing. Where's the hanging up laundry? You go down for a ways.
the
painting.
Painting?
No, the painting's good, too. The painting.
Paint?
She paints.
You know, it's funny because I've seen all of these like here and there. I didn't put it all together.
I didn't know it was one dog.
It's one dog.
One brilliant dog. One amazing owner.
Wow.
The relationship with these two. So anyway, so I just wanted to do that to brighten everyone's day.
So I'm going to get a border collie. That's all there is to it. They're smart, but you still have to train them. I mean, is that right? I mean, they won't just do this spontaneously.
This is the dance.
I wonder, is she a dog trainer or is she just?
She's 17 years old. She's a teenager.
She's a teenager.
But the relationship she has with this dog is just clearly pure love.
Yeah. Well, I pity the guy who gets in between her and the dog. That's for sure. This is it. That's it. Very nice. That wasn't your number, but I like it.
Well, 50. The dog went down the hill 50 times.
50 times. I'll give you another number. $2 billion. Dogecoin. How much Dogecoin does Robert have? Father Rob, this was a joke. Currency, a joke cryptocurrency that isn't even an active development, but just because Bitcoin is so hot now, anything that's cryptocurrency, I didn't even know Kodak was around. I thought they were long gone.
My favorite was Long Island Iced Tea. They renamed the company to Long Island Blockchain.
Oh yeah, because they were getting sued or something. Anyway, Long Island Blockchain. It has nothing to do with blockchain, but boy, it was good for business. So if you have any Dogecoin, you might want to
sell it now.
Well, I hope you didn't forget your password. Let's just put it
there. I made the mistake of telling my wife that I had some Bitcoin many years ago and sold it or lost it.
How many passwords have you tried now on yours?
Hundreds. I have a worse story, Matthew. I have 7.85 Bitcoin in a wallet that we created. They were donated by Twit listeners. For a while, it was taking donations in Bitcoin. and I can't remember the password I used to encrypt it. But I have it. I have it open on my desktop, and every day I try.
And how many times are you allowed to try in a day?
No, there's no limit.
Oh, it doesn't cut you off?
It's a local wallet.
Oh, it's a local wallet.
Eventually you'll get it, right? Eventually you'll get it.
Well, yeah, I think so, because I didn't generate a password in LastPass and use it. So it's not in LastPass. So that means I use...
It's something made up.
It's something I know that I made up, you know, like that I used.
Right.
It's a variation, and so I'm just trying all the variations. It's not good.
Well, good luck.
What is it worth now? It's $100,000+. It's ridiculous.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was down a little bit today.
I think I had about 100, I think.
You had 100 Bitcoin?
Yeah, because they were worth like 35 cents at the time.
Jesus, Matthew.
Well, it was a long time ago.
What does your wife say to you now? Jesus, Matthew.
That's like $1.5 million worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I know.
You could buy a lot of canoes on the lake for that.
By the way,
Life Hacker says don't get into Kodak's cryptocurrency, Kodak coin.
No. Of course not.
Yeah. In fact, according to Jacob Kleiman at Life Hacker, why Kodak's Bitcoin scheme is a scam you should avoid. They're selling a Bitcoin miner.
Isn't Telegram doing a big ICO?
Yeah, that's what I thought was kind of interesting. They're going to use it as their payment system on Telegram. And that strikes me as, but again, I'm not sure. They want to do a big ICO, a lot of money. That's an initial coin offering for those of you who haven't been sucked in by this crazy bubble. And by the way, the guy who invented Dribble, is it Dribble? Ripple.
Ripple, yeah.
Not Dribble. The Ripple founder is richer than Mark Zuckerberg, at least in Ripple.
Or was briefly.
Maybe not anymore.
$59 billion, I think.
His Chris Larson was number five on the richest people in the world list. Number five. The problem is his 5.19 billion Ripple coin. Oh, I'm sorry. He has 5.9 billion worth roughly $60 billion on paper, more than Mark Zuckerberg, but the value has tumbled. And he's now no longer one of the most rich men in the world. He's just a billionaire. Just a billionaire. We're Bezos, by the way, now clearly it's done. He's not going back and forth with Gates. He's over $100 billion.
Jeez.
I wrote about a journalism startup called Civil. Have you heard of them, Jeff?
No.
Yeah.
Are they using ICOs?
So they're going to do an ICO. It's basically a marketplace for journalism and sort of distributed newsrooms, and they're going to payment structure is going to be based on their own token.
I be careful, folks. It's so tempting because there seems to be so much money involved, and I just worry that people are they're all big pyramid schemes.
I think after the bubble, it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah.
Like things are going to get interesting.
But when will after the bubble be?
Soon.
Okay. Maybe I better keep entering passwords then.
Yeah.
This must be your story because I did the headline that you wrote. Another tech executive sees damn burning bush.
That was me.
I know. Ex-Apple. Oh, this is Tony Fadell.
Yeah, I'm just sick of it. It's just constantly these guys get incredibly wealthy and then they say, oh, it's like Oprah. It's like Oprah saying, oh, no, now I'm going to be virtuous after I ruined television.
Yeah.
They're woke.
Fadell, he got woke after he made billions. He designed the iPod, then started Nest.
Yeah. Yeah, the most addictive thing that there was. Yeah. And now, but technology addicts people. This is bad. Come on. Yeah. Come on.
Now he says, adults are addicts, not only kids. Google needs to help. This is in response to the Apple activist investors, Jana and CalSTRS, begging Apple to do something about iPhone addiction, even though they own Apple stock. How about you, Mr. Jeff? We got Jeff's number. How about you, Mr. Matthew Ingram? You got a pick or something you'd like to plug or mention before we sign off?
Actually, believe it or not, I was going to do the Sarah Silverman thing. So we've already done it.
Nice. I stole your thing. Nice. Well, this has been a lot of fun. It was very nice to have. Stacy stopped by from Vegas. Yeah.
Great to see Stacy.
Great to see you. Is your babysitting the dogs at your son and daughter son in law? You like saying son in law. Your new son in law and daughter's house.
Yeah.
Is that in Toronto?
No, it's in Hamilton.
Okay, in nearby Hamilton. Nice to have you, Matthew, all the way from Hamilton.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Always a pleasure. Matthew is now a writer for the Columbia Review of Journalism. You can find out more about him at MatthewIngram.com/work. One T in Matthew. At Matthew I on the Twitter. It's always a
person makes that mistake once.
Why? Is there
Then Matthew lets you know in no uncertain terms.
There's only one T.
I learned.
There's only one T.
I did not do it again. You hate to misspell somebody's name.
And Mr. Jeff Jarvis spells it completely.
Two Fs.
Completely normally. BuzzMachine.com at Jeff Jarvis. And of course, don't forget, he's got lots of great books, including What Would Google Do? Public Parts.
Geek's and now Brand I'm Gifts. Reading.
And Fire and Fury, which I was going to briefly, I was thinking he missed the boat. He could have called it The Worst and the Dimmest, playing off David Halberstam's The Best and the Brightest, which apparently Steve Bannon gave everybody in the White House.
What, The Best and the Brightest?
Yeah.
Really?
But it's not clear, but I think Steve might have missed the point of the book, which is, you can have the best of the brightest and still get into the quagmire and called Vietnam. Yeah. But maybe he did. Maybe that's the point he was making. I don't know.
I thought
it was Edel Rodriguez.
The Roman Empire.
Yeah. No, I don't. Who's Evan Rodriguez?
Edel Rodriguez is the illustrator. He did a lot of the Spiegel and Time covers that are really so good.
Yeah.
And he, if you Google him, he did an alternative cover for Fire and Fury, which I think is great.
Oh, let's see.
See if I put it up on the rundown.
Yeah, I like his work.
Apparently, there's another Fire and the Fury book that's selling out.
Yeah, it's a 10-year-old book. Author. Has nothing to do with it. It's selling very well.
He's quite happy. All right.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes This Week in Politics. Full of sound and fury and signifying nothing. We do this show every Wednesday, 1:30 p.m. Pacific. Oh, here's the book. Here's the book cover. Well, no, but that's, how is that? It's just fire. Well, it's just pretty.
He did that.
It's pretty.
Well, you can't see it because actually it's Trump's face. So
that's the hairstyle.
I get it.
They shouldn't have cropped that. That's
they
stupid,
cropped it. They took away all the point of it.
Yeah, that's dumb.
Let me see if I can.
You see the mouth there?
Yeah. Should I start wearing my Oprah for President pin now?
So you know who's going to be in Davos.
Oh, who? Oprah?
Trump.
Really? He's going to Davos?
Yeah.
Davos. When's the last time an American president went to Davos?
Clinton, the first term.
Wow.
So somebody suggested to me that I should get a hat made that just says, make Davos great again.
We thank you for joining us 1:30 Pacific every Wednesday, 4:30 Eastern time. That's 21:30 UTC. You can watch live at twit.tv/live. Join us in the chat room, irc.twit.tv. Hang out with us. Of course, if you can't be here in person or on the live stream, you can always hang out on demand at any time at your convenience. Just go to twit.tv/twig or subscribe in your favorite podcaster. We thank you all for being here. We'll see you next time on Twig.